All right, so...
But you didn't bump into things
the last,
in the airplane, right?
Nothing that matters.
There's a concept in Elul. We touched upon this the other day. I think I recorded from Al-Sheikh. But it says about the 10 days of tshuva that Dirshu Hashem behimotzei karub yosikarev, call out to Hashem when he's found. He's there. Hashem is close to us during those 10 days. So the Panim Yafis and others say that the second half of the pasuk, call out to him when he's close, refers to the days of Elul. So we have 30 days right now, starting today, of a time that we can call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, Rav Tzadik HaKohen tells a story that happened, that he saw with his own eyes. Harris Marty, listen to this story. Rav Tzadik HaKohen lived mid-1800s, during times of terrible poverty in Poland. So he said that he was, and there was starvation, hunger, it was very difficult times. And he saw a father and a son walking on the street. And the father saw a gold coin on the sidewalk. So he said to the kid, "Hey, Bisov, pick up the coin." The kid said, "Tati, I fear that if I bend over, I won't be able to get back up." That's how weak he was from hunger. They talked, you know, and so finally the father bent down and picked up the coin, realizing where his kid was holding. Father took the coin, went to the Pick and Save, and bought with this coin 18 apples. I was going to take them home.
18 pounds?
Apples. He ate one himself to revive himself. He handed the kid an apple, and the kid refused to take the apple. So the father said to my kid with tremendous love, like, "Why won't you take an apple?" He said, "Because I refused to bend down and pick up the coin. I don't deserve an apple." Father was crushed. I just couldn't believe the plight of this and the innocence of this child. And so the father said to the kid, "Do me a favor. I have to make another stop. But if you go home and told him, you know, he asked him to go somewhere and then come home. In the meantime, the father, knowing the way the kid went home, he dropped several apples along the way. Okay? Knowing that the kid would pick up the apples. And he'd have, you know, then he wouldn't feel guilty and he would eat them. But by the time the kid picked up the apples, they were full of, you know, they had schmutz on them from the road or whatever. So he had to take them and wash them and clean them and so on. Kid came home. He said, "Tati, you're not going to believe what happened. There were apples on the way, and you know the kid had some color in his face. He looked like he had come back to life." And he told his father, but he had to go clean them because they were dirty. And so Tzadik said that he's seen many times in life that on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem presents us with the opportunity to daven, to plead, to do things right, and we're foolish. And we let the opportunity slip by. But we have a compassionate father. This compassionate father provides opportunities throughout the year where we can also do it. But then it already requires you got to wash the apples and you got to clean them up and you got to peel them. And if we would just do it right the first time and use the opportunities as they were given to us, then we wouldn't have to go and do the cleanup later on. So the language of the Torah is the predecessor to the Shulchan Aruch, says anyone who increases to plead for mercy during these days, zuchusu laya, merit will stand by this person. So the gift of Yemei Elul is to increase our pleading on high, to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the gift that Hashem gives us during these days. And it's twofold. It's to rectify what we've messed up and to set the record straight for what we expect, what we want during the coming year. The Leket Yosher, again, a halachic work, was a disciple of the Trumas Hadeshim. And he writes that from Rosh Chodesh El until Rosh Hashanah, that his Rebbe, the Trumas Hadeshim, would say Baruch Sha'omar for an hour every day. Just the one paragraph, Baruch Sha'omar, in Shacharis. He would spend an hour singing, repeating, kaching, in the words of Baruch Sha'omar. So he's saying here that the you know, we're all looking for what we should be doing. There's a focus, a centrality of focus on what, on tefillah. Now, this Remeilach Bideman brings an amazing thing. He says that utilizing the power of prayer during these days, going back to the pasuk in Tehillim 37, that those who find shelter in HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not regret it. He says a person will never regret trusting and finding shelter and pleading with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's where the focus is. So he said, what happens? The Yetzirah is brilliant. He's been around a long time, much longer than we have. So he convinces us that we're unworthy. So yeah, that was true for great people who knew how to say Baruch Shomar, who knew what to have in mind, who knew how to daven. But for people like us, what's the point? It's a waste of our time. We're not gonna accomplish anything. So he says that's when we hear that voice, we need to identify him as the Yetzirah. He says that worse than that, a person who falls for that is a shaita. Person who falls for it is an idiot. He quotes a Ramban. It's a fascinating. I remember hearing the Ramban, but to see it in this context is fabulous. Moshe Rabbeinu had a stutter or some speech impediment, right? Says the Ramban that Moshe Rabbeinu was never healed of this speech impediment because he never asked to be healed for it. Had Moshe Rabbeinu uttered one tefillah saying, Rabbeinu Shalom, I want to be able to speak properly, Moshe Rabbeinu would have been healed. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to because he didn't want the job. So he never asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu to cure him of his speech impediment. Had he only asked, Hashem would have taken care of it. And he writes there that tefillah is from one of the most underutilized tools that Hashem gives us, and it's totally wasted. We just he gives a very good imagery. He says that you need to go from place A to place B. Best example of this is to go anywhere in New York City. Okay, you have potholes, you have traffic. Worst yet, you have New York drivers all over the roads. You ever notice how many New York drivers are in New York? They're all over the place. So getting from one place to another is a nightmare. In the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, there's traffic on the BQE. Where is anybody going at 2 o'clock in the morning? We should go in. What does the Chacham do? The Chacham goes and talks to Jim Goldman and says, would you please come pick me up in the airplane? You avoid the potholes. You avoid the traffic. You avoid the New York drivers. You got a problem with a guy who has no depth perception, right? But otherwise, you avoid. He says, we look at life. We look at life circumstances. We look at the challenges. They're all real. And we fail to realize that the Rebbeinu Shlom provides us with an airplane called tefillah. And utilizing that koyach ha-tefillah in earnest, we can avoid the pitfalls and the hazards of of the roads. It was a very good the airplane as the solution. I thought was a brilliant, very very good parable. Before I heard about the depth perception,
that helps.
So you always slammed into the ground when you landed.
The Bala Ikrim, the Sefer Ikrim, is one of the fundamental svarim of Jewish thought. He says, in addressing this excuse that we use about our unworthiness in prayer, he quotes that Chazal tells us, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, about Menashe. You know who Menashe was? Menashe was a king who was increased idolatry in Klal Yisrael manifold times. He was, the Chazal tells us terrible things about Menashe. And the Gemara there says that when Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu to go and bring the Makkos against Paroi, Hashem says, go to Paroi in the morning. Why? So Chazal say, because Paroi was going to daven. Had Moshe Rabbeinu waited at all, Paroi would have davened to be saved, and Moshe Rabbeinu would have had a tough time going up against the Pharaoh's prayer. Now, who are we talking about? We're talking about a sorcerer. We're talking about a person who murdered children daily. A wicked, cruel person. And nonetheless, Moshe Rabbeinu had to take into account the fact that Paroi would daven and Hashem would hear his prayer. So most of us are better than Paroi. We haven't murdered a whole lot of kids. And, you know, we're still yet to perform our first article of sorcery, despite the depth perception issue. Right? So, our tefillahs can be received. It says about Menashe that had Menashe davened, he could have been transformed. So we gotta take this more seriously. That the power that the Torah says that we're gifted during this month of Elul, we're gifted the power of tefillah. That we gotta take advantage of it.
This king was named Menashe. We give the bracha to our children or to our sons. We use Menashe.
Yes. Not that Menashe. That's the.
No, but it's the same name.
Yeah.
We know which one. Shem knows.
Kefraim of Menashe.
If you know, if Hashem is orchestrating this whole thing against Paro, and Moshe Rabbeinu was ultimately to prevail, why would it have mattered? Couldn't he have just ignored?
He certainly could have, but nonetheless, it's a force to be reckoned with. I remember hearing from Rabbi Shore once. Rabbi Avram Shore once shared, it penetrated my thick skull. What was the one tefillah that the Kohen Gadol said in the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur? You're going in, it is the moment, right? The moment. He goes into the Holy of Holies. What do you imagine the Kohen Gadol said?
Just let the rope hold?
No. He said, Hashem, please do not answer the prayers of the traveler who prays that there shouldn't be rain. That's the prayer the Kohen Gadol utters when he goes into the Holy of Holies. You read it in we say it in Musaf on Yom Kippur. That the traveler's prayer should not be received. You have millions of Jews davening for rain, and we're worried about one shlemiel who's out on the road during the rain davening, and we need at the highest moment on the greatest day in the holiest place with the holiest guy, he should daven that that guy's prayer shouldn't be received. Well, what's up with this? Said I'm sure that you heard this from somebody. He said, yeah, we're all standing in the warm Beis HaMikdash. The lights are bright. The weather's perfect. And we're davening that Hashem should provide us for rain in the rainy season so that our crops can grow. But you have a Yidala out on the road. He's cold. He's tired. And it starts raining. the quality of that prayer has the ability to undo, to override the prayers of millions of Jews who are davening in comfort and security. That's why that prayer at that moment needs to be said at that holy spot, so that it will have the ability to counteract it. When we're standing in Elul, we need to see ourselves as the guy who is traveling point A to point B, and we're concerned about what our day of judgment is going to look like and how we can undo the damage that we've done.
Could I ask something about that?
Yeah.
Could you swap out the Holocaust for this? All the people in the camps were like the guy on the road, and yet gurnished.
Who says gurnished? Every person who was saved wasn't gurnished.
Okay. Right.
Every person who was saved was in a complete world. So what about the people who weren't?
A lot more words.
A lot more weren't than were, right. Correct. But what's fascinating is that those who were saved, they were kind of divided into two worlds. The ones, I mean, I heard this from the Bavar of numerous times. He told me, I mean, you're talking about a fellow who for 4 years had his back up against the wall, stripped naked with a gun to his head several times, and the last second he was spared. But not once, not twice. I mean, and miracle after miracle after miracle. I mean, he carried 4 different passports and was smuggling Jews from Poland into Romania to save them. Sheila, close the door there, please. And he told me numerous times, he said, it's not possible that anybody who survived did not see, I'm speaking double negatives, did not see the Yad Hashem, Hashem's hand, time after time after time. Meaning, it was almost, he said, all the people that had the contacts, the government contacts, and the you know, all they had all the friends in all the right places. So to Gornish Golf, if the decree was that they were to die, they died. And the most unlikely Shlemiels survived. It was like literally Hashem chose person after was over. Favos, one Rabban Shalendo, but even those who rebelled afterwards, who were angry at God, had a very deep anger, which spoke about their emuna in Hashem. If you're angry at God, you believe in God. You don't agree with what He did, but there were very few people who denied His existence. They just were very angry at Him. Rabbi Senderovic went into a barber last week. The guy was watching some film about the Holocaust. So when Rabbi Senderovic walked in, the barber said to him, you probably watched a lot of these. And Rabbi Senderovic said to him, I didn't need to. He told him, nobody chops this. Rabbi Senderovic had siblings who were killed. His father was married before the war and had a bunch of kids. When somebody says that to you, no, I had brothers and sisters who were murdered. You know, there's a whole different... And this isn't just some remote. I had a great grandfather who was murdered.
Is the Hineni prayer also said at that time, and is that meant to override? Help the, override.
The Hineni before that said before Shmona Esrei.
Yeah,
that's a very very late addition to the davening. It's, you know, a lot of places don't even say it. If it wasn't a really good Gishmake Chazanis piece, I bet you most places would omit it. It's a very late addition. When we get into this Rosh Hashanah thing, like one of the things that we gotta look at is what's the focus. There's really two things going on simultaneously, seem almost unrelated. One of them is the Day of Judgment, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about Slichas because we start the week before Rosh Hashanah, we start this process called Slichas, is pleading for forgiveness. At the same time, you have this day of the coronation of Hashem as king. How do those two things, as we say in Yiddish, how do they jive? What's the day of judgment? Why don't we have one a day of judgment, then another day of coronation of God's Rosh Hashanah? And again, the commentaries all talk about it's a shtickle backwards. Why don't we have Yom Kippur first? I mean, who does Hashem want to be coronated by? A bunch of, as we say, filthy, sinful Jews? Or why not have a Day of Atonement so that we're all tzaddikim? And then we'll get the tzaddikim, we'll get together and coronate HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Melech. Wouldn't that make more sense? You have the coronation first, and then you have a Day of Atonement. It's a shtickle backwards. What's more, you don't really have a sign in the Torah that suggests that Rosh Hashanah is a day of judgment. The Torah says it's a Yom Teruah Yelachem. It's a day of blasting the shofar. So Reb Saadia Gaon has 10 reasons which are very, very worth of mention. They're written up in the Artscroll Machzor. 10 reasons for the blowing of the shofar. But primarily, the blowing of the shofar was something that was done when one coronates a king. So they tell a maisa, some sefer used to repeat this mashal, that there was a minister of the king who was cheated on his taxes or whatever it was. Some did some act of dishonor to the king. And they threw him in prison. And the king, knowing who this guy was and what his position was, decided that he would be hung. The minig was, in this country, that this was the way the king celebrated his birthday, is that those who were rebellious against the king, they had massive parties to it was the day of the re-coronation of the king, the whole kingdom got together to re-accept this king. It was a good, decent king. But it was also the day that, therefore, those who were rebellious against the king were executed. Well, this guy was a very loyal minister to the king, other than the fact that he cheated on his taxes. And he was in prison, and the court ruled that he was going to be hung. Well, as the day of the birthday got closer, word got out in the kingdom, especially among the ministers, that this guy every day would do a shtickle dance. It's a day closer to the coronation of the king. The king's going to be coronated again. Completely ignoring the fact that he was going to be headless by the time the day was up. So somebody reported this to the king. That, you know, so-and-so, the minister, is rejoicing in these mamash. He's cocking in the coronation of the king. Could you believe that this is... He's completely ignoring his own plight, that he's going to be killed. The king was curious to observe this on his own, so he dressed in common garb, and he waited till it was dark in the prison cell, and he went to visit this minister. And he begins to schmooze with him about whatever. He changed his dialect. He had enough ability. He said to him, what's going on? So this minister says to him, you realize that in 12 days is the re-coronation of the Melech. And it's, there's nothing in it. And the king was blown away by the fact that this fellow's entire focus was not about him, but rather was about the king. That somehow a person has the ability to rise above their own personal narishkeit and focus on the fact that there's going to be a day of coronation of Hamlochas HaKadosh Baruch. And that's how the Sifrei Kodesh address the kind of the juggling of the Yom HaDin, the day of judgment, and simultaneously the day of the coronation of the king, to the degree that a person is busy with himself, are they really challenged to be able to focus on the coronation of the king? Ramat Yisrael Solomon, Zazan Gazin, Shtarg, Everif Ushalema, has a very practical way of approaching all of the personal prayer that goes on Rosh Hashanah. He says, if it's all about God, why is there Zachrayna L'chaim? And you have numerous prayers where we're asking for Zia. So he says, or Ramat Yisrael says, that you have a king who releases a contract to build a new palace. And a bunch of people in Yiddish they're called contractors. So they apply for the job, and the contractor comes back to the king. The king awards him the thing, and he comes in, he says, okay, I need wood, I need stone, I need gold and silver, I need granite, I need the electricians. So the king dishes out whatever the guy needs to be able to build him the palace. Because how can I expect the guy to build the palace if he doesn't have the needs? So there's another guy who sees that this guy walks out with trucks and trucks filled with Midgitas Chayre. So he goes into the king also. He says, hey, Adonai HaMelech, I want wood, I want granite, I want gold, I want silver. And the king kicked him over. Yamashigan, Havebiste, who are you? Where do you... This isn't just a lack of depth perception. This is a complete lack of...
Perception.
Right? So, Ramat Yisrael Solomon says that therefore we understand how these two concepts are dependent upon one another. If the king is our king, and our mission in life is to build him a palace, then we can come to the king and say, Zachreinu L'chaim, I want health, I want wealth, I want naches, I want achavas hadas, I want time to learn, I want time to serve, I want all the, you know, our full list. It's not about me. I want to build you a palace. How can I build you a palace without the basic needs? So they say that is really the preparation of Elul, is making the blueprints for the palace. That that's where, and in order for us to keep focused, that it's about the coronation of the king, we blow shofar all Chodesh El to remind us of the purpose of Rosh Hashanah, which is the coronation of the king, so that we don't forget as we go through each of these, what the tour calls these days of opportunity. It's a merit for him. If a person is mevakish rachmim, if a person pleads for mercy during these days, it's a schus for the person. But to keep focused on what the goal is, we blow the shofar every day to remind us that there's a day coming that's going to be the coronation of the king, and that's what all of this is all about, that it's a 30-day preparation for this hamlocha of this coronation that's going to take place. So it's all geared to the coronation of the king. The Dubin Magid has a very clever, yes, always these very clever mashalim, these parables. The Dubin Magid said a mashal like this, that there was a fella who used to make a lot of money on his certain days of the week, and then he would take it to the bank. So there was a ganef who wanted to lay hands on this money, but he found it very frustrating because the guy always went from point A to point B on a busy street, and it was impossible to rob the guy on such a busy street. So he constantly declared, you know, there was each Tuesday the guy used to go with this big money bag, and how is he going to get the money? So he came up with a Givaldiga plan. On the main drag, there was an expensive men's suit store. So he went into the suit store and he said, I need to buy a suit. So the guy says to the owner of the store, says to him, Okay, what size do you want? He says, well, it's not for me, it's for somebody else. The guy says, how am I supposed to sell you a suit for somebody else? So he says, you know what? I'll find the guy on the street who's the same size as the guy I want to buy the suit for, and you'll measure him, and I'll know what to buy the suit for. Givaldik. So this guy comes by with his money bag, and he says, oh, that guy, he's mamish the same size. So the guy comes into the store, and the store owner goes out and says, would you mind coming in? I want to measure you because the guy wants to buy a suit. And he goes and tries on this expensive suit. And while he's trying on the suit, the guy steals the money and runs out. And this guy wants to run after him. The store owner says, you're not going anywhere. You're wearing my suit. So he got away with the money. So the Yetzirah says, when you want to go Chodesh Elul and prepare, this Yetzirah has been around a long time. So what he does is, especially during the month of Elul, he gets you to put on other people's suits. He gets you to daiga, to start worrying about money and to worry about gezint and to worry about all kinds of things. As long as you don't think about Amlachas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever you do, don't think about God, because that'll be his end. All right, take it up tomorrow.
Six
o'clock.